And we're back with another edition of Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. I'm Drew Mentock, always joined by Irish Illustrated senior recruiting analyst Eric Thomas. And we have 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports national recruiting analyst Tom Loy here with us as well today. We've been off for a little bit. I was actually in the UK when some of these most recent commitments happened. So we'll get caught up on some of those. Obviously, the first big one was Braden Parks, defensive tackle out of Chicago, who committed on July 23rd, bringing the 2027 class to 23 total prospects. It currently ranks third, according to 24/7 Sports. Obviously, he's a guy who we thought might be going to Oregon for a while. I think that's where his heart was leaning. But Notre Dame, sounds like they really did a lot to get back into this. Tom, I know you touched on it before that Notre Dame was kind of getting back into it. But like, how did they ultimately get this one done with a blue chip prospect who, again, was probably leaning elsewhere after his official visits?
He nailed that, man. It was back and forth for a while. Notre Dame definitely led at one point. I mean, he has a bunch of ties, but then the next day, Oregon would lead, and then it would be Notre Dame the next day. So this continued for what felt like a few months. Well, I would say really felt like a few years. This one dragged on for a while. Ohio State and Georgia tried to get in play, but really it was Oregon and Notre Dame setting the tone. He liked everything at Notre Dame. I mean, he liked everything at Oregon. Like, the Ducks did a phenomenal job, but he was about as close to committing as you could possibly have. But in the end, he decided, hey, everything I like at Oregon, I can get at Notre Dame and more. And he eventually bought in. And I'm not going to lie, everybody around this kid is fired up because everybody around him wanted him at Notre Dame. So again, Charlie Partridge does what he does and lands a big time player along the defensive line. Marcus Freeman played a big role down the stretch. And yeah, man, I cannot say enough of good things about Partridge. I'm sure we'll touch on that later, but really, really big win and great job down the stretch just to get him to buy into everything Notre Dame. Big picture, like, yes, to the academics, and they could talk about a 4 for 40, but the kid fell in love with Oregon. So how do you get him to flip over? You get Marcus Freeman to get involved. You get the family involved. You teach them about, hey, like, we got to look at this decision beyond just football. And I think that's what sealed the deal.
Eric, obviously this is a loaded defensive line class. They've got a bunch of other blue chippers, but Braden Parks, he's listed at 6'3", 305. I've talked to Kerry Neal, former Notre Dame defensive lineman, who's also his private trainer. He talked about how Parks has the potential to be one of the top defensive linemen, if not the top in the country. So what do you see from him on film that maybe sets him apart from some of the other guys they have in this class?
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of on the whole class, the theme of this defensive line class is just relentlessness. Every single one of these guys plays like a T-2000. They just do not give up. There's no give until the whistle blows. And Parks is no different with that. Now, where he's a little bit different, especially from the interior guys, I think the functional play strength for Parks is just a little bit different than some of these guys. Like Fuller Runcho and Sagan Alexander are both strong players, but Parks has the signature lean that Priester referenced in the film room, where he's just a problem to have to deal with. It's almost impossible to stand the guy up. Even when he gets in double teams, he rarely gets stood up. He's going to push into the line, which is obviously going to gum up the operations, especially in the run game as Parts kind of try to move and go upfield. And sort of his worst reps, he's just a boulder that's hard to move, right? Like that's a nice consistent element to his game that maybe some of these other guys who are like more of that athletic penetrator, sometimes that can get them out of position, they can be worked around. Parks is just hard to move, man. If he's going to get in the way, you're not going to get him out of the way. You've got to go somewhere else. So I think the indomitable play strength is there. And then I think that the balance is also pretty exceptional. Like, you watch him work and penetrate into the line, even through a double team, like whether it's, he's just got a bull rush straight through, he's got good pad level, he's coming out the other side, ready to explode into the backfield. If he's got to work around, he's coming out the other side, getting his feet under him and just going downhill. There's no moment to gather. There's no moment to stop and assess and kind of look at, hey, where did the ball go? What am I still looking at? How did the picture change since I penetrated? He's quick. He's fluid. He's got great balance. He's really physical. And what I like a lot about Parks compared to some of the other defensive linemen in this class is there's a lot of versatility in this group. But if you lined up Braden Parks as a nose tackle for his entire Notre Dame career, I think that he would be a very valuable asset as a nose tackle. He would be able to add pass rush utility, which isn't exactly what you expect from that position. But if you need to, like, hey, David Foloroncho needs a blow. Let's get Parks over, move him over to the other side of the interior line, maybe get Tiki Hola, another guy built to nose out there. He can still provide you utility and value as if there's no drop off because he has that athleticism and those tools to penetrate.
And a few days after that, Notre Dame is starting to look to the class of 2028, and they added Chicago area defensive lineman, 2028 edge rusher Darian Prescott. He's out of Bolingbrook, Illinois. He's number 7 overall player in the class according to 24/7 Sports right now. He's 6'4", 255 pounds, but he's still recorded as running a 4.89 second 40-yard dash, which at that size and youth is quite impressive. I feel like Notre Dame's really hitting Chicago hard, kind of reminiscent to the Lou Holtz days where you're getting the top guys from Chicago to stay in the area and come to Notre Dame. Tom, this is one I wasn't even familiar with him as much when he committed. Can you talk a little bit about this recruitment, how Notre Dame got this done so early in that cycle? I feel like Notre Dame's just starting to really hit 2028, and obviously getting a guy like this in the class early, I feel like sets a pretty big precedent.
Rinse and repeat, right? Like Partridge identifies a top talent. They push hard for an early commitment. They prioritize him better than anybody. Mike Martin, Carter Ahman do a great job getting everything buttoned up behind the scenes. Marcus Freeman seals the deal, and Notre Dame lands again one of the top players in the entire country. So that's really what happened when it came to Darian Prescott. But what I like most about this is that he decided to move his process forward and become the face of Notre Dame's 28 recruiting class. He's taking pride in that. You always want somebody front and center leading the charge for you guys on a recruiting cycle, and that's exactly what Prescott wants to do. So he's taking pride in it. He wants to be active recruiting all the top guys to join him, and hey, this is why I chose Notre Dame. You guys should too. And it also shows how rock solid he is in his pledge. So he's not going to go anywhere, and he chose Notre Dame for all the right reasons. I remember talking to him when we first released the 28 rankings, and Notre Dame was one of a handful of schools that he was really, really excited about. And usually, barring the occasional surprise, if you get a kid that close to home, that close to your backyard, especially with the ability that Partridge and Freeman has to close, and give some love to Chris Ash too, because he's doing a great job as well. So when you mix everything and you see a kid that looks at Notre Dame the right way, Notre Dame's really difficult to beat.
And Eric, I mentioned some of his physical attributes, but what do you see when you also flip on the film and what he does on the actual football field?
Yeah, he is, man, he's long, he's aggressive, he's quick. When you watch Darian Prescott get into the game, like there's a certain level of projection with speed rushers at the high school level, right? Like, are tackles going to be faster? Are they going to be able to set faster? Is he going to be able to get that edge quite as quickly as he did? How does the play strength go? I think that Priester mentioned this on a recent podcast. I thought it was a good point. Like, Prescott still looks like a guy who should stay 28, right? Like, he needs a couple years to develop, fill out his frame. But there's a quickness there that, with his length, is just uncanny. And if he can continue to work that and continue to be just like an uncomfortable presence for tackles to have to work with when they have to step wide, it's a really nice boon for Notre Dame's team. Like, I think that with Prescott right now, the biggest thing you can see is a physical presence who can get after quarterbacks quickly. And he's one of those guys who, like, if you need a quick pressure, you need to get to the quarterback in under 3 seconds to disrupt the throw. He's the type of guy who has the physical traits to be able to do that. And even if he doesn't get off the line, like, especially well, say the tackle gets a good set on him, he's got to make a second move and get through. He's long enough to disrupt quarterbacks from a pretty good distance. So for me, Prescott's really just, he's like an intimidating presence off the edge. I think the biggest thing is we want to see that continued functional play strength growth from him. That's kind of the next step in this game.
And with Prescott, I guess he's not technically a five star yet because I don't know if they have five stars for 2028 just yet. But you look at him, you go back to Cisse Fuloranco, both composite five stars. Obviously, Rodney Dunham in this 2026 class was a top 10 player. So you're looking at four five star defensive linemen in three classes, and then just a ton of other blue chippers and stuff like that. So, I mean, especially with the addition of Partridge, as you've both have touched on, like, really ascending with defensive line recruiting. And I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts, and we can start with you, Tom, on just what Notre Dame needs to do to become that maybe preeminent defensive line recruiting program. Obviously, they're already trending that way with just what they're doing, but what else do you think we need to see for them to maybe take that next step at a position where I feel like they might get a guy here or there, but now they're adding levels of talent they hadn't done on a consistent basis in 30 years, maybe. So it's definitely getting to a different level.
Yeah, I think that at this point, they are surely making a case to be one of the top defensive line recruiting groups in all of college football, especially in the 2027 class. I mean, we mentioned Abraham Cisse, David Fularuncho, Aiden O'Neill, Jackson Vaughn, Braden Parks, Sagun Alexander. So, I mean, we are talking one five-star, two top 100s, and two top 247s in that group, and a three-star guy in Alexander that's all upside, all potential, and they want to see what he can do before his ranking gets finalized this fall. I think Notre Dame is firmly in the mix for that. I would say Ole Miss is doing a really good job this cycle. They got eight defensive line commits right now. They got three in the top 247. You got Ohio State with five commits, including the number one player in the country, edge rusher DJ Jacobs. They also have four other top 247 guys. So Ohio State is loaded along the defensive line. Texas A&M has five defensive line commits this cycle. They got a bunch of the top 247, including a five-star in Zyren Forsell. And then Oregon is probably the other school that's in the mix for D-line U this cycle. They got another five-star guy in edge rusher Rashad Streets and a couple in the top 247 and a couple in that three-star range. Right now, I would give the edge to Notre Dame or Ohio State. I mean, that Ohio State class is special. It's top heavy. I mean, they are loaded across that front. And again, the key there is going to be DJ Jacobs, because I know we're getting away from Notre Dame here, but like Ohio State fans, you got something to worry about. Tennessee's involved. I'm really keeping an eye on Miami. So I think if he flips, it's a slam dunk. Notre Dame's got the best defensive line classes in the country. But right now, you got to give the edge to either the Buckeyes or the Fighting Irish in 27.
Eric, with that, do you think maybe Notre Dame showing it a little bit more on the field? I mean, I feel like they're not having defensive linemen go in the first round. I think the last one might be Jerry Tillery. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, in the 2019 NFL draft. So do you think maybe showing it on the field would kind of get them over the edge, or take them even further in terms of what they can do on the recruiting trail?
Yeah, I mean, like Tom said, for the 27 class, I think that they've already sort of set themselves apart from pretty much everyone except Ohio State. But as you go to move to the 2028 group, especially with a new coach like Charlie Partridge coming in, they have a really deep group of defensive linemen this year. I think showing not only production from that group and, potentially moving up the draft stocks of these guys, because that's always going to catch eyeballs, but showing production throughout the rotations of that group and really emphasizing, like, hey, we're recruiting a bunch of you guys who are super talented, and we're telling you that we're going to play you all in rotation. We're telling you we're going to let the best guys go to the top. Just from a new coach perspective, like being able to put that on film and show those guys exactly what you mean, what those breakdowns look like, how you're able to use these guys interchangeably, that's just proof of concept, right? Like Charlie Partridge is a little bit removed from the college football game, being in the NFL the last few years. That doesn't mean people don't remember who he is or know who he is. But ultimately, this is a clean slate almost for him at the Notre Dame side of things. Like recruiting these five stars and these top 100 players, that's not necessarily the type of guys he was making relationships with at Pittsburgh or his previous stops. So for him, this is kind of a new ball game where he can invent what his image is with these top guys. Like, yeah, I play a deep rotation of guys because we consistently have that level of talent, and I'm recruiting all of you because I believe that you can be a valuable addition and still boost your draft stock, even if you're not playing, 60, 70% of the snaps like maybe they would have back in the day. Now, in terms of like actually getting that D-line U moniker, I think what you said, Drew, it all comes down to that first round pick status, right? Like when we think of recent D-line U's, it's Ohio State, it's Georgia. A few years before that, it was Alabama. These teams that constantly had guys going in the first round. I think if Notre Dame is able to not only, get a guy in the first round or in that top 50 sort of range here this year, but in the next couple of years, kind of start stacking that and see a familiarity there, that's only going to go so much further for them to be able to say, hey, not only are we giving you guys this best opportunity and we're getting you drafted, but now, hey, we're getting you drafted with that big boy money that's going to change you and your family's life.
No, I think those are great points, and we'll see. I mean, Boubacar Traore obviously is getting some first round love. Bryce Young, we saw on the freaks list recently, he's down 10 to 15 pounds, but his broad jump has jumped up 9 inches. And
He looks good.
Coach Partridge just talked today about how he's now learning to use that explosiveness and direct it appropriately. So they do have some tools that if Coach Partridge can develop them properly, they can potentially have that potential. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how that breaks down. But I appreciate all your answers, especially diving in to defensive line recruiting. And we'll be right back with the next segment, Burning Up the Boards. And we're back with our next segment, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Judge Arthur Vandelay. What does the 2028 quarterback board look like? Is Notre Dame going to try and flip one of their top targets who committed elsewhere, or are they making inroads with any uncommitted prospects? Tom, we'll start with you on this one.
Man, this has been something to track closely. They look like we could just look at a couple names. They love Donald Tayron the second, but I'm expecting him to pick Texas A&M on Saturday. They have not made a run at Anthony Turner, a guy that I'm a huge fan of in our top 100. They obviously lost Neiman Lawrence. They weren't going to get him. Kingston Preier, they were about to. He ended up, they couldn't really come to a deal. He picks Alabama. So Caden Kraft is another people have brought up, but he's expected to commit to Tennessee soon. I'd say Kansas State's probably the top player for Titus Heward. Graham Simpson is a name, but I feel like the SEC schools are going to be in play. Trey Wright is exciting, electric, but he's probably going to commit to USC soon. So I would say right now, the two that I'm really tracking closely, two that I really like a lot that I would keep an eye on are top 247 quarterback Hunter Fujikawa. He's got a shot to be a dude. Like Notre Dame likes him a lot. He could be one that they absolutely pivot towards and move on. The other one is Josiah Boyd out from the West Coast. Oregon and Kentucky are in play. I think that Oregon's going to be tough to beat, but Notre Dame is absolutely keeping tabs on him. So he's a name to track closely. If I could move to another category that if Notre Dame offers, I would expect them to get that one done. I mean, we've talked a million times about Brady Quinn out of the Sunshine State. I think he's very much in that next tier of guys that could land an offer. I think there's a kid out in Illinois, Matthew Lee, that I think is going to have a big season. And a kid that I'm a huge fan of in Pennsylvania, out in Pittsburgh Central Catholic, is Owen Herrick. I think he's going to have a tremendous junior season. So again, all three names to track closely. Moving into the Hoosier State, there's always a couple names to keep an eye on. I think Chase Grove is a 28 that's going to have a big junior season. Oscar Sloan is another one that they are keeping tabs on. I expect both to be in South Bend at some point this season for a game. A couple other California quarterbacks, Aiden Edwards and Jackson Carper on the board. And then lastly, a kid in Tennessee, right in the Nashville area, is Gavin Strang. He's a kid that I know he's coached up really well with the guys at QB Country. A lot to like there. He's big. He's like 6'6". I mean, there's a lot to like there. So he's another one that I think that Notre Dame could eventually at least keep tabs on, maybe get him to campus for at some point, just to kind of get an evaluation, an in-person evaluation for a game. But like I said, those first two that I mentioned are definitely ones that Notre Dame could pivot to, and Boyd and Fujikawa. And then that next tier are guys that I definitely think that if Notre Dame offers, that recruitment is going to be quickly over.
Next question is from ScrawDaddy18. Is there anything to keep an eye on in the 2027 class, either potential flips or senior risers coming into the class, or guys who could be potential flip risks out of the class? And Eric, we'll start with you on this one.
I mean, in terms of flips to Notre Dame, linebacker is obviously the one we've been tracking. We've thrown out names like Caden Henderson, Aronson Randall, Noah Glover, several guys who obviously Notre Dame offered, made a run at kind of at various points in their cycles, right? Long time with Caden Henderson, a little bit longer with Glover, kind of at the end with Randall, but they're still staying involved. So those are kind of some of the guys that we're watching on that side. Not necessarily a flip, but just like an additional 2027 guy to keep an eye on. Phoenix Evans has talked to several people about making the choice to reclassify. He's decided, or at least he's said, he hasn't decided, I should say, that he's likely going to make that decision after this season. He wants to, get things kind of taken care of, get a clean slate. We'll see what happens there. But if Notre Dame, if he flips to the 2027 class or reclassifies, I should say, I would expect Notre Dame to continue to press there, especially since they've continued to monitor kind of closing out the DB class with one more. He's an ideal sort of fit for that, especially with that safety nickel corner versatility. In terms of a Swiss Army knife on the back end, it'd be hard to close with a better one than him. And then kind of looking at, guys in Notre Dame's class. I want to be clear. I'm not expressly worried about anyone flipping from Notre Dame right now to the point that it's like, oh, I'm actively tracking because I'm concerned. But that being said, like, look, Albert Simian has some of the biggest dogs in the country after him. They are certainly not scared off by the fact that he committed to Notre Dame. His phone is going to continue to ring. I think every single one of these defensive linemen is probably hearing pitches from other staffs across the country like, hey, there's a ton of you in this class. Do you want to maybe go somewhere where there's a little bit more clear air? There's any number of opportunities there. Obviously, Miami was pretty heavily involved with Full of Run Show. I mean, you have Oregon with Brayden Parks that we already talked about. And then Abraham Cisse had LSU heavily involved. The Tigers are known for trying to pull off flips, especially late cycle. Lane Kiffin liked to do that throughout his entire career. I would not expect if Abraham Cisse's phone continues to blow up until signing day. So those are the ones that, like, the interest is definitely there nationally, but again, I'm not actively sitting here telling you that any one of those are necessarily a flight risk here on, August 12th.
I would also just add Osonni Gales. He obviously was a guy that Notre Dame was ready to take, but decided to stay in-house with their moves at the receiver position, and then obviously go with Julius Jones as the other receiver option this cycle. I think he's definitely a guy that they're going to continue tracking moving forward. I think he's committed to Alabama, but if he ends up flipping somewhere, I would say the best bet is Washington. I think he had like 22 guys on his official visit there. Up in the Seattle area. So, but I do know that, man, that kid fell in love with Notre Dame. So if they came calling, wouldn't shock me. And then the other one in state would be Sean Fox, the linebacker, the edge that's committed to Kentucky, Indianapolis area. I think Notre Dame could continue to kind of keep an eye on him moving forward. The big position, and I'm glad you brought up Phoenix Evans, the big position that I'm told that they're going to be tracking in terms of uncommitted guys or potential flip candidates is the cornerback position. So, look for a few other names to kind of maybe get offered or get on campus at some point this fall.
Go next to a question from the Salty Jazz 14. I had a question you guys didn't have time for last time. Apologies for that. Who are some guys from the Freeman era, or heck, even the Kelly era, with whom Notre Dame actually had a good shot with, but that many Notre Dame fans might not know about?
I mean, this question was great, and I'm going to take it a little bit of a different direction, but it was really like it brought me back some great memories throughout the process. And I mean, if I could just quickly skim through a couple of these years, I started covering Notre Dame in 2013. So 2014 was really like my first cycle covering Notre Dame. And I mean, if I remember correctly, obviously it's like 12 years ago, but Brandon Dawkins commits to Notre Dame when Every Golson gets in trouble. And I was working with Dan Murphy over at BGI many, many moons ago before he ended up going to ESPN. And I'm pretty sure he left a wedding to go into the bathroom and write a story from his phone about Brandon Dawkins wanting to commit to Notre Dame. And the problem was Notre Dame wasn't ready to take his commitment. They obviously ended up pivoting to Shon Kizer, but I just remember him trying to be like, oh, Everett Golson got in trouble, guys. I'm going to commit and make all the Notre Dame fans happy. I'm like, that is not how it played out. That cycle also was the Elijah Hood commitment and then flip to UNC and the roll toilet with Alabama. Isaiah McKenzie not being a take and angering every single person at Notre Dame. All the fans, I should say, Mekhi Quick and Juju Smith, now Juju Smith-Schuster, both indicating to Notre Dame that they were coming at one point. So 2014, my first year really on the beat, was eventful to say the least. 2015 was Blake Barnett committing to Notre Dame, flipping to Bama, and then Brandon Wimbush eventually joining the class. You had Sean Crawford flipping from Michigan. We were all over that one because he kept telling me behind the scenes, like, I'm not telling Michigan, but I'm telling Notre Dame I'm coming. 2016, at the time, I remember how upset everybody was, how they lost out on quarterback Malik Henry because Brandon Wimbush committed the cycle before. Obviously, things didn't work out with Malik Henry, but it also, Kevin Stepherson, man, talk about what could have been with that one. 2017, they didn't recruit AJ Dillon. They thought he was a linebacker, and needless to say, he was pretty productive on the other side of the ball. Cole Kmet and Brock Wright both committed. What a haul at tight end. Josh Kando, Robert Beal, these guys, they felt like they were absolutely going to land. They did not in 2017. And then a name that everybody loves to talk about, Thomas Graham. For anybody that's new to Irish Illustrated, he was committed. They lost him to Oregon because Brian Kelly and Todd Light did not eat during the in-home visit late in the cycle. The family had this beautiful spread with a ton of food, and they felt very disrespected that they did not eat a single thing, and they left and eventually decommitted from Notre Dame. 2018, we had the Washington dominating Notre Dame in the secondary. Kyler Gordon and Julius Erving both picked Washington. They were both inside the Goog. They felt like they were going to end up at Notre Dame, so that was a blow. 2019 was kind of a weird quarterback cycle. They landed Brendan Clark, but they could have landed Graham Mertz. They could have landed Max Duggan. They kind of slow played both, but that also brought us Kyren Williams, who Tommy Rees had to go against, from what I'm told, the entire Notre Dame staff, and stand on the table and say, "I want to take this guy," when nobody else was all that sold. 2020 was Jaxon Smith-Njigba camping at Notre Dame and leaving without an offer. He was not good enough for Notre Dame. I think he's pretty good. 2021, they obviously chose Tyler Buchner over JJ McCarthy. 2022, they could have landed Drew Aller if Tommy Rees offered. When he wanted to offer, he ended up slow playing, decided not to. He felt a certain type of way about that one, chose Penn State. Nick Singleton also ends at Penn State. He was about to choose Notre Dame, committed to them on campus, and decided to change his mind before going public with that. 2023 was Dante Moore, a silent commit with Notre Dame. Carnell Tate, a silent commit to Notre Dame, or at least as close as he could have been to a silent commit to Notre Dame. Didn't want to pull the trigger and go with his decision. CJ Carr following him in 24. So, and again, I mean, I've said this a million times, but Tommy Rees had Notre Dame ready to land either Julian Sain or CJ Carr in 2024. He made the push for CJ Carr. Julian Sain obviously ends up at Bama and then at Ohio State. So a lot of crazy things over the years, but I got to say, like, phenomenal question. It just brought back some incredible memories throughout the years of just kind of covering Notre Dame. And it's what makes this place so special, man. It's such a fun program to cover.
Eric, we'll go to you in a second because I know you have some more too, but quickly, I think the more we get some inside stuff, maybe Tommy Rees did a little bit better job with recruiting and some of those other things than we sometimes give him credit for. At least the fan base does. I think everyone loves watching Kyren Williams play to this day. But Eric, I know you got some too for this answer or this question.
Yeah, I've talked about this one before. Clark Phillips was a corner. He committed to Ohio State, ended up going to Utah. Notre Dame was in on it. They were right in that top grouping. He was talking about taking visits in the summer, and the Notre Dame staff was like, no, you should visit in the fall. It's going to be a better trip for you. And then he decided to commit in the summer because that's what he wanted to do. Jalen McMillan, Tom kind of talked about the defensive backs who went to Washington. Jalen McMillan and maybe Kyler Gordon, I'm trying to remember now, it's been several years, were at Notre Dame for the Echo ceremony shortly before National Signing Day, like hanging out with commits, going through the visit, like it looked like they were close. And I remember we as a staff were kind of all watching over the shoulder, like, I think this is going to get done. And then it did. Joseph Anderson, an edge rusher who ended up at South Carolina, he's now at Purdue. There was some hurdles that he and Notre Dame worked for like close to a year to clear to get him into school. It just didn't end up working, but that kid wanted to be at Notre Dame. Like he wanted to be a Fighting Irish football player, and it just didn't work out. And then a couple for the Freeman era. Obviously, this is more like what I've actually covered here as opposed to when I was at Notre Dame. But first one that comes to mind with the Freeman side is Bear Bachmeyer. Now, obviously, he's a guy that Notre Dame was interested in the lead up with Deuce Knight and everything. There was that relationship. Once everything with Deuce started to break down, before he even flipped to Auburn, we had sources in Los Angeles telling us, like, Bear Bachmeyer is telling people around him that he's still interested in Notre Dame. There's still a connection there. Like he would be interested in flipping. Ultimately, Notre Dame knew that, decided not to pursue, went after, got Blake Hebert instead. But that was a guy that, you know, with how he's done in the early part of his career, maybe a little bit of a wrong call in hindsight. And then this cycle, we talked about this briefly. I know Lois brought this up, but Wyatt Smith, edge rusher committed to Ohio State. He's a guy that if Notre Dame had really pressed and gotten involved, I think that we could have seen him end up in this class. Now, obviously, look, you're not sweating that one too much, given what we just talked about with Notre Dame being D-line, you potentially this cycle and everything. Like, it's not the end of the world when you're kind of picking and choosing amongst top 100 options. But again, he's a guy that had Notre Dame gotten involved, similar to, oh God, now I can't think of his name, Texas's quarterback last cycle. If Notre Dame had gotten involved early,
Oh, Diabelle.
yeah, it probably would have gone their way.
Yeah, that I'm so glad you brought up Jalen McMillan too, because I'll never forget Chip Long had that thing done dead to rights, and yet the kid couldn't get on the phone, didn't have a relationship with Brian Kelly, and that really swung everything. Because he's like, look, man, like I gotta have a relationship with my primary recruiter and the offensive coordinator, but I have no relationship with the head man. And like that was a huge problem for him. So I'm glad you brought that one up. And then one more that I just thought about when you talked about like picking and choosing one or the other was, I mean, you think about Will Howard and Riley Leonard. I mean, Bear Bockmeyer was telling everybody he was going to Notre Dame. Well, so was Will Howard when he was transferring
True.
from Kansas State. I mean, he our Kansas State guy hit me up and he was like, hey, just so you know, Will's telling everybody in the building that, hey, I chose Notre Dame, that's where I'm headed, blah, blah, blah. And then I get word, I was at like a Ruth's Chris, I get word, hey, we just took Riley Leonard. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Like all of the, like I think I had a story written for Will Howard, and I had a story and graphic made for Riley Leonard, and ended up being Riley. But man, it's just, that's the kind of stuff that like, look, there's a lot of people in this space that do a great job. And I just feel like we at Irish Illustrated, we do something a little over the top. And I think we're never really too afraid to share the behind the scenes stuff. So a lot of that stuff for the longtime Irish Illustrated subscribers is not new information. We don't mind peeling back the curtain because of, you know, the sources and the relationships we have, and they're pretty comfortable with it. But man, Notre Dame has been fun to cover for a long time. But man, so many twists and turns, and I'm glad you brought up, like, you get academic opportunities too. That it's sometimes you can't take everybody. I mean, you know, you've been in the building, so and that's a blow when you see a kid that really really wants to come, and it's all of a sudden like, hey, like you didn't go to class for 2 years, so that's a problem. I still talk to Marcus Griffin, who the defensive lineman out of the state of Washington, who's on staff at what see Cal or Washington now. Either way, I mean, that was the one where he committed to Elston, but he couldn't go public because he didn't have the academics thing. I think it was a foreign language credit, and he couldn't go because they wouldn't take a second foreign language credit or something like that. Like, it's just stuff like that when you're covering other schools. I'm not going to name names. You don't necessarily have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I didn't necessarily expect us to go back a full like 13 years with that, but I really appreciate how in depth you both went. And also, three of yours that you mentioned, Eric, that Jalen McMillan, Clark Phillips, Kyler Gordon, all day two draft picks too. So some of those misses don't turn out. Those three in particular all turned out to be pretty good players. Our next question is from Still Rolling. Do you see any drop off in the secondary recruiting in 2028, the first full cycle without Mike Mickens, who of course went to the Baltimore Ravens to be their secondary coach?
Not really so far. I do think it's a little bit early to be making like definitive statements because what we can track at this point with no commits, right? There's still a lot of offers on the defensive back side. They're being highly aggressive about going after blue chip defensive backs. Some of those date back to Mickens, some of them are with Henry, but all in all, they're still pretty aggressive about connecting with these guys. You talk to these defensive backs, they say they're hearing from Notre Dame, particularly from Javon Coughlin. And that's a sort of a point in and of itself. Like Notre Dame retaining Javon Coughlin and having him as the safeties coach and as sort of like the defensive back, you know, recruiting guru, if you will, like he has such a unique energy and presence to him. And there's a unique credibility that he seems to have with these recruits that really puts Notre Dame in a different area. Like they have some level of consistency, even if he's in a new role and had to be retained. Like there's still some level of messaging consistency and everything there. What I sort of wrote here, I mapped it out. Zay Hassan and Ace Alston were both committed by December 15th of last year. So if you want to like look at this as by the start of 2027, they don't even have like a blue chip sort of that caliber defensive back or more specifically cornerback in the class. Is that cause for concern? That's kind of when maybe the antennas go up, like, okay, they're a little bit behind schedule with last year. Obviously, Mickens had to build into this, but you know, Henry's kind of born on not born on third base like the negative, but just further ahead than where Mickens was coming into this job. Like, I think that we're too early to be concerned, and all the vibes and the energy and the little pieces of evidence we can pick up without having committed prospects are still tracking very well. But if we get to that, you know, beginning of 2027 period, no one's committed, that's when maybe you start to wonder, okay, are they maybe a little bit behind schedule where they would have been with Mike Mickens, literally Mount Rushmore assistant at Notre Dame?
I would just say quickly, these guys, The reason I don't expect a drop off is because of Xavier Hassan and Ace Alston. Those guys had every opportunity to back off their decision. They're not going to get to play for Mike Mickens. And they could have looked elsewhere. They had every offer in the country. They could have gone and played any other school, their runner-up school, whatever. They still chose Notre Dame. They still chose the academics. They chose the off-field reasons to pick a Notre Dame, and they still chose to play for Marcus Freeman. So I think those two guys, Zayden Gamble as well, like you could, the entire group, like they chose Notre Dame for reasons beyond just Mike Mickens. Mike Mickens is one of one. He is the best in the business at what he does. But in the end, they are trusting the head man, Marcus Freeman, to do right by them on and off the field. And kudos to them. You know, it's rare, but these kids picked Notre Dame for the right reasons. And I, for that reason alone, I do not expect any dropout because it all comes back to Marcus Freeman.
Next, we'll hear from Golden Domer 25. Historically, can you name recruits who committed elsewhere that might have mentioned the Goog not being up to standard with the rest of the elites out there? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you see Shields Hall being an effective recruiting tool? Tom, what are your thoughts?
I don't remember too many kids saying anything negative about the Goog. I remember how much I hated the lighting inside the indoor facility for a very long time, the
Yes.
old one. You couldn't take photos, and I mean, there's that when you compared like that room, that facility to some of the nation's best. It's like, guys, this is Notre Dame. What are we doing? But I think big picture, like they've done a really good job of. I mean, it kind of goes back to the last question. Like, you're going to pick Notre Dame for specific reasons, and the facilities are not necessarily gonna nudge you one way or the other. So now the crazy thing is that Notre Dame has arguably the best facilities in America, whether it's USC now or Nebraska's new facility, everything like that. Like, there's going to be a lot of stiff competition. And Notre Dame, again, they move the needle when it comes to financial compensation in the NIL era. It was a little slow starting, and now they're competing with the best and the best. Now they got the best facilities. They got arguably the best ho head coach in college football, one of the best. They got a great roster, and they have the academics to back it up. So again, they have pivoted and done everything right to continue showing, hey, Marcus Freeman, we have your back. We're going to do everything possible to make sure that your on-field product is as good as our off-field product, and we are going to give you every opportunity to be as successful as possible. And that goes for the players and the students as well. So kudos to Notre Dame, man. They have not held back, and they are pushing all the right buttons.
Yeah, kind of on that point, like I even dating back to when I was walking amongst the visitors because it was my job at Notre Dame, right? Like I heard occasional comments about the indoor facility that it was lacking or whatever. I'm not naming names because I'm preserving. I just don't actually remember. I just remember hearing, parents make comments, whatever. But other than the specifically the indoor facility being outdated was kind of the gist of the comments. Like it was never a big deal, and especially because even dating back to the Kelly era, like Notre Dame goes out of their way to identify guys where that's not the priority. So you're not going to hear that stuff as much because it's not the priority. But to Tom's point, like, look, Notre Dame is recruiting the top talents in the country as their primary, one, two, three, four, five options, right? And if you look at the guys in those ranks, every single one of them, if you ask them what they're going to be doing after college, they're going to tell you play in the NFL. Statistically, that's not true, but every single one of them is going to tell you that. So what can Notre Dame sell now? Like before, they were selling the best combination of college football and athletics. That's their pitch, right? Best combination of college football opportunity and athletics. They're selling this beautiful campus. They're selling the access to this coaching staff and to Marcus Freeman specifically. And in the last couple of years, as Tom mentioned, we've seen the NIL game ramp up. Well, now for these guys who are looking at themselves as future NFL players, they're getting money to be in college. They're getting access to these top coaches. They're now getting world-class facilities as part of that pitch in order to prepare themselves, familiarize themselves even with what this is going to look like for the next level. So again, it's another level of credibility. And whereas I don't think Notre Dame is going to recruit players who are going to commit because of Shields, right? Like they're just not after that kind of guy. But to Tom's point, like if you have a guy, say he's a five-star player, whatever position, he's coming down to like Notre Dame, Ohio State, Miami, and some of these schools. Like if we're looking at tiebreakers for how close this thing is getting, Notre Dame just added another major asset of theirs. That's no longer a negative point when you're looking at these other top programs. Now they're right there at the top. So there's less reasons for someone to say, oh, I don't want to choose hard, right? They have every amenity in the world. They have every opportunity in the world. And now, if guys want to take that challenge, There's really very few reasons for them other than, hey, you know what? I just want to do something different. If that's the choice, that's the choice. But Notre Dame is giving guys every opportunity to say yes to Notre Dame, even if it is the tough choice.
Our next question is from PA Irish 5. It's a question inspired by Cornbread Adams, a 2028 safety prospect out of Tennessee, I believe, who Notre Dame just offered. But he wants to know, what are some of your favorite recruit names?
Booby Feaster in this class or in last class, just awesome. Bone Crusher in 28 is absurdly sick. And my favorite ever is Derrick Henry, Tractorcito, the little tractor. Just so cool.
I mean, I don't know, but I do. I will say, like, recency bias. Braden Robinson, who ended up at Notre Dame, like, quick six, kind of love that. Like, he's like 5'6", and everybody always wants to say pick six for the DBs, but quick six was a good one. Booby is an all-timer for me. Obviously, the movie, the kid, everything like that. So, Ethan Feaster just sounds very weird to give him love. Jalen Lott was a good player last couple. Coming out of high school last cycle, his was Spider-Man, which I kind of liked. It's just his ability to play all over the field, two-way guy. But yeah, Booby's an all-timer. So.
See what happens with Cornbread. And our last question is from Decon or Decoon 7. Which would you rather have from Notre Dame's recent cycles? The 2026 defensive line plus the 2027 offensive line, or the 2026 offensive line paired with the 2027 defensive line?
Oh, that's tough. Honestly, I don't care who's on the offensive side of the ball. Just give me this 2027 defensive line class. I mean,
Exactly what I said.
I don't really know. I mean, this defensive line group is just full of a bunch of difference makers. And then if I pair it with the 2026 offensive line group of Ben Nichols, Grayson McHugh, Charlie Tom, who else was in that? Sullivan, G Gregory Patrick, Sullivan Garvin. Yeah. Like I think that's probably the best move because I think you're gonna get like a really good career out of a lot of these guys with some potential first, second, third round picks along the offensive line. And then when you look at the 2027 defensive line class, like it's just absolutely jam-packed with dudes. So yeah, I'll go 2027 D line, 26 O line.
Yeah, I pretty much land the same. I tried to break it down in my head as like, all right, let's look at it within the context of like Notre Dame's roster and then just in a vacuum. And I landed on the same answer both times because the 27 defensive line class is just so good. Notre Dame obviously has an embarrassment of riches within like the sort of underclassmen into the third year ranks at offensive line. So I think that just kind of looking at that side, like there's already enough young talent in that room that I would go for the elite defensive line and I would. The very, very, very good O-line, if you want to call it that. But if you just look at it in a vacuum still, like Notre Dame is the only school competing with Notre Dame in terms of like the sheer volume of blue chippers added on the defensive line over the last 26, 27, 28 cycles is Ohio State. Like Miami has some very good top-end talent, but numbers-wise, they're just not caught up. And there's a few other schools that are in that same group, like in terms of volume, man, that Notre Dame class is just astounding.
I don't disagree with either of you, but I just want to point out that you turned down a 2027 offensive line class as two top 15 composite players, another top 100 in James Halter and Ronnie Dunham in the 2026 defensive line class. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think that just goes to show you where Notre Dame is right now in recruiting along the
Rudolph is
offensive
somewhere
defensive line.
furious.
Yeah, you're already making me feel bad about my decision. Cut it. We'll restart it. No, it's impressive, man, what they're doing in the trenches, man. It's I don't know, man. It's special, man. And that's where you know like things are gonna be really, really good for years to come.
Absolutely. The good news is Notre Dame has all four of those groups, so you don't have to actually pick. And that's all for this edition of Irish Illustrated Tracking the Trail. Thank you for everyone who tuned in, and thank you especially to everyone who submitted a question. I feel like for kind of a slower time recruiting, those questions made the day. And if we need to get Tom Loy involved to kind of spark some inspiration in the future, we might have to do that again. For anyone on the Four Horsemen Lounge, you definitely know what we're talking about. But Eric and Tom, thanks again. I feel like this is a lot of fun, provide a lot of information, and I appreciate you going way back over a decade in some instances to pull out some information. We'll be back with another episode of Instant Analysis on Sunday, and then we'll have two more episodes of the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast next week as well. Also, you can save right now 60% on an Irish Illustrated subscription through September 1st with a discounted annual and full price monthly subscriptions. Those are for new members specifically. So visit our website. We have that story. It's always in the first three or four, so you can find it there if you want to join. You're not currently a subscriber. But for everyone else, we'll see you all again soon, and have a great day.